Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I was going to say good evening, Andrew, but I guess I don't know when people are listening to this. It could be morning where you are, right?
It's possible that it could be morning.
If they're listening to us tomorrow, it's the morning. If Valentine from Russia is listening, I don't know what time it is there. It's probably six. It's probably the middle of the night.
I think he said he listened over breakfast, so I could be wrong.
True.
But good morning to all.
It's got to be – we're 6 hours behind Europe. I mean, we got to figure this out for the London show coming up in August. I think it's 6 hours. I'm pretty sure.
I think it's 6 hours from you, probably 7 from me.
Oh, true. That's right. We're in different time zones.
We are in different time zones. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, we have to get this figured out and figured out soon. I mean, one simple Google search could probably do it, but
– We only got 3 months to figure it out.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, we're both just about 3 months away. And we're going to talk two main things I want to talk about before we get to emails and stuff like that. And I'm sure if we have different topics from callers, we can get to those as well. The number, if you don't know it, is 515-605-9345. But the first thing I wanted to get your opinion on was or is this presumed announcement that's coming up on Wednesday's Dynamite of a new TV deal with Warner Media. I guess I would say there's two things I want to talk about. First, one is good and one is not so good. We'll start with the good because it seems like AEW is about to get paid $1 billion if the reports are correct for their television product, which is fantastic news for them. Way more than, quite honestly, I would have predicted, but I think it goes to show you the value that networks are placing on live programming because it's not that it's DVR proof, but those viewers are so much more valuable. And I think that's why they're going to pay the number, like I said, it's rumored to be about $1 billion.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy because I know over the past like couple of years we were kind of speculating how much their next contract would be, and it's like, TNT, TBS, they got such a bargain essentially off of AEW because they were paying what like $30-40 million a year, and now they're about to get five times that much if my math is right, and I'm guessing the bad part there is that we'll talk about, but they do have to produce some more programming, but it's still like
true,
pretty astronomically higher than they were making before. And if that number is true, getting them to $1 billion, like that makes them, you know, a pretty big player, for the next few years.
Andrew, I didn't lose you, did I?
I thought I lost you. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you now. I was cutting in and out there. Okay, so I'm sorry. Just what did you say right at the end? I think we didn't hear what your take was right at the very end there.
Oh, just the fact that if they're bringing in $1 billion, like that's going to make them a major player still for years to come. So yeah, I mean it's a huge, huge step forward for them. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean if the math is correct, and Wade Keller had a great Keller's Take column on pwtorch.com. I think it ran yesterday or Saturday, but it was fantastic. Actually, we'll kind of run through it here over some of the details, but there is a new weekly Saturday show that's going to be upcoming. It's going to be called AEW Collision, probably going to debut in June. They're going to have a content agreement with the rebranded Max, which was formerly HBO Max. I would imagine that's where All In ends up. And we've talked about why haven't they announced where that's going to air yet. Is it going to be a pay-per-view? Is it going to be on TV? It would make sense that this becomes a streaming special, and the reason they haven't announced it yet is because they have not announced their streaming deal yet with Warner Brothers Discovery. And then ultimately, $240 million a year in rights fees, which is $4.6 million per week on average per year over 5 years, gets them it gives them over $1 billion because it's a five-year deal. I'm thinking it's a four-year deal. So it hits the $1 billion mark for them over 5 years. Actually, gets them over $1 billion, an incredible amount of money, and makes them this is something that I'll be honest with you. I never thought we would see something like this in wrestling, maybe even in our lifetime, because TNA drew numbers and never got a deal to this level. It was always just reserved for WWE. So we had seen this go on long enough where I just figured in our lifetime, it's going to be WWE gets paid the big bucks for pro wrestling, and no network out there is ever going to want to take the number two brand and still pay it $1 billion. But I think the way the television has changed over the last 15, 20 years has shown that those live viewers are worth so much to these networks now, and they're competing for so many of them that it became a situation where there was another wrestler, there was another network out there that was willing to spend that type of money on wrestling.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because, like, finally, like, the math, like, checks out because AEW does roughly half of what WWE does, and they're going to be making roughly half what WWE does from their television rights fees. Whereas, like you were saying, like, Impact back in the – at Impact's peak, I believe they were doing about a third of what WWE was doing, like a 1.2 rating to, like, a 3.6, 3.8 rating, and they were not making one-third of what WWE
did. Not close.
Not even a tenth. I mean, a 20th, maybe? I have no idea, but they were, they were making so little. So it is, I'm very surprised, too. I was thinking they would, you know, highest 100 million a year. Like, and even I thought that was going to be a stretch, but the fact that they essentially doubled that is pretty crazy.
This tells me, too, I'm willing to bet there was potentially other partners out there. There were other bidders. If not, I mean, it doesn't probably go this high if there wasn't. Or at least there was some conversation. I mean, because that's the thing, ultimately, like, you talked about TNA, right? And you could feasibly look at it and say, well, TNA should have been worth a third of what WWE was from a television rights standpoint at the time. But, I mean, this is a pretty good lesson in that at the end of the day, yes, that's all great on paper, but you are really only worth what someone is willing to pay you. I mean, at the end of the day, that's all that matters, you know? And I think the bigger thing is there wasn't a network other than Spike, which gave them, you know, good money and it allowed them to exist for a while. There was not really a network out there that was willing to take the number two brand in pro wrestling. Once WCW went out of business, Turner was out of the question. If they couldn't have the number one, they didn't want anybody. Same with USA, because Raw jumped over to TNN, I think, at the exact same time. And USA was basically like, if we're not going to have number one, we don't want anybody that's going to be number two. That's why ECW, I think at one point, was talking to USA, but it never happened because there was a decision made by an executive that if we can't have the number one brand, we're not going to have any brand at all in the wrestling space. So I think it's there's a network partner out there now that's willing to pay this type of money for pro wrestling that didn't exist before. That's kind of the biggest thing. But why? And this is where I think AEW fans may get mad at me for saying this, but I don't think this happens. I don't think this type of deal happens. And you could argue that AEW's existence may not happen if WWE's business did not grow to the level that it has. Because without WWE making the type of astronomical money they're making on their television rights fees and their streaming deal with Peacock and everything else, there's no other network out there that I think would have looked at AEW and said, well, we're going to give you this type of money to sustain your company in a rights deal. As much as fans that are just staunch WWE haters may be reluctant to admit it, if WWE's business was not doing well and was not generating so much money from their rights fees, there's no way that this deal happens because the market would not have been set. WWE, at the end of the day, WWE set the market, and then AEW got their deal based upon that valuation, probably, as you pointed out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it probably made it like a pretty easy sales pitch for Tony Khan if there was other people potentially involved too, because he could just go to him and say like, hey, we do great ratings. Essentially, we're in the top 10 basically every week on cable. We will deliver like half of what WWE does, which is still really good. Like, hey, do you want to pay us half of what they're making? I mean, yeah, no, I agree. Without those astronomical numbers that they've been getting from NBC and Fox and USA, like just insane amounts of money. Like, yeah, that definitely set kind of like some of an industry standard of sort of like, this is how much wrestling can be worth in 2023.
It also tells me that you and I and other people, you know, we sit and talk about growth and trying to grow the audience and all this other stuff, which it is important. I'm not saying it's not important. But what I'm saying is that I don't think Warner Brothers Discovery cares if there's growth or not, because there really hasn't been. Like, from year over year, from the start of their company to now, there has been. But, I mean, they've been pretty, you know, from a viewership standpoint, a rating standpoint, it's kind of leveled off. Like, there hasn't been a big jump in the last year or two. So it says to me that Warner Brothers Discovery is fine with what AEW is now. They're not necessarily looking for it to grow. If it continues to generate the same numbers it's generating right now, comparatively speaking to WWE and other programming, I think they're probably fine. You know, because I think growth overall, just from a company standpoint, growth is important. They're going to get more money next time around if they grow their audience and et cetera. But at least from this round of negotiations, it doesn't seem like Warner Brothers Discovery had much concern about the relatively leveling off of their numbers, which has kind of existed over the last year.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy because, I mean, I think, you know, probably from its peak, Dynamite is probably down, I don't know, like 20% or so. Like, they were doing like relatively like 1 million, and now they're doing 850 or so. Whereas, like, you look at Rampage, it's doing like half of what it used to, and that doesn't seem to have bothered them. They're like, it seems like they're cool with 300,000 people on a Friday night, because we've heard no news of them canceling Rampage. In fact, it sounds like it's going to be more of like a younger talent, developmental type show. But yeah, they're cool with 300,000. So I can only imagine, you know, Saturday, I think that show is only going to do 400,000 or 500,000 on a Saturday. That's my guess. But I'm guessing they'll be very like thrilled with that.
Yeah. I don't really know what to expect for the Saturday numbers, to be honest with you, because we don't really have any history other than like WCW Saturday Night. Like, I can't think of a Saturday show. The only thing I'll say is maybe they're expecting the numbers to be okay because they've run pay-per-views on a Saturday before, and you know, WWE now runs all of their PLEs on pay-per-view on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're beginning to believe that there might be a built-in wrestling audience there on Saturday nights. I just think Saturday is such a weird night because there's going to be people that have events that they go to on Saturdays that may not exist another night of the week. You know, for their, especially their audience, the 18 to 35 year old male, I would think more of them would be interested in going out on a Saturday night. So I think there's some challenges there, but internally, I'd be very curious in seeing what their internal expectations are for that show, because I agree. I don't think it would be fair for them to expect what Dynamite's numbers are on Saturday, only because Saturday night is traditionally such a bad night for television. It's not a bad night for pay-per-view. UFC has used Saturday nights for years. Big boxing has used Saturday night for years. Now pro wrestling has started using Saturday nights. So it's always been the pay-per-view night. It's weird. It's always been the pay-per-view night. It's never really been the television night. Because even the big networks, I mean, the big network shows, are there any shows that air on Saturday nights? Like, I can't really think of one. It's usually like, you know, 2020 and Dateline NBC. It's nothing that they consider, you know, important. They're not airing a big television drama on a Saturday night.
No, I think it's been like 30 some years, because I think back in the day, like, they used to, like, CBS, I think, like, Golden Girls were on like Saturday, like, they would put like marquee shows. But they don't do that anymore. And I guess I was thinking, like, maybe the closest comparison would be, one is like, look at Rampage's like highest ratings. So 500,000-600,000, maybe. I guess I don't recall if they did 600,000, but so maybe they're thinking something in line like that, like, hey, they'll do 500,000, and if it's earlier in the day, maybe they'll do 6 or 7. I don't know. And then, but I guess also, like, you know, look at SmackDown, like, they draw pretty solid ratings on a Friday night. And that's another night where, you would think a lot of people just like not be tuned into it. So maybe it will do better than I'm guessing, but if I had to predict, I would say it's going to do like in the 500s, but we'll see.
And I wonder if they're not even concerned about the live number. Is it more the live, what is it like,
3 day or
live plus the plus threes or whatever it is, the DVR numbers. I mean, I think they're going to focus a lot more on the DVR numbers than they will the actual next day numbers. I would think.
Yeah, I that's going to be like a fair amount too. I mean, just like I just watched Rampage like 2 hours ago, so I mean, I think it's going to be like a show like that for me where I'll probably tend to watch it on Sundays, and then probably
I agree
too. Yeah.
I think, you know, we were saying it should be a Sunday night show, which they won't, which Tony won't do because he won't go against the NFL. But I think more often than not, I will watch it on DVR on Sundays. I think I will very rarely end up watching it Saturday live just because there's too many things going on. I'm working. I've got other things. I might be out or whatever. I think Collision will tend to be a show that I will probably sit down when everybody else in my house goes to bed on Sunday night around 9 o'clock because my wife's a teacher and my kids go to school. You know, when I'm kind of up on the couch alone at 9 or 9:30, that's probably when I'll put Collision on.
Do you think, like, so Tony's, we've been talking about this too. Like he said, he did not want to compete against the NFL. Do you think it would be that big of a deal? Like how many people, like I don't watch NFL at all, but is there going to be a lot of AEW fans out there who are like conflicted? Like, oh, should I watch this Jaguars game or should I watch AEW?
Yeah.
Like, is it that big of a crossover?
I probably not. I don't really think so. I think it's more... I think it has more to do with the family business. Mm-hmm. Like I wonder if they would get negative reaction from the league or from the other owners if they are putting on a show that directly competes with the NFL brand. You know what I mean? I think that's probably what they're mostly concerned with,
mm-hmm.
is getting blowback from other owners or maybe even the league itself for airing competing programming to the National Football League that technically they own 1/32nd of, because the league is owned by the teams essentially. So I think that's probably what, I don't think they're worried about it like clipping their audience. I think it's probably more they're worried about what's going to happen when they sit in on league meetings and somebody brings up, hey, you know what, you know, the Sunday Night Football ratings went down a little bit this year and you started your kid, Shad, your kid started that show. You know, I think they're worried about things like,
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, because I was thinking, I'm like, I bet it's only a pretty small percentage who are diehard like Jaguar fans and AEW fans, but that makes sense what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to go against any NFL. It's not even necessarily the Jaguars. They don't want to go against any NFL game, is my guess.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Because someday he'll basically like inherit the team, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, so I'm like, I wonder what he'll. And I'm just like, completely random thought, but I'm like, man, I wonder what happens if like when he finally owns the team, if he'll like secede some control over that, or you know, because that's going to be like even way more responsibility someday.
Yeah, yeah, 100% for sure. Let's kind of run through Wade's column here because he brings up some other good points, and then there's something else I wanted to talk to you about too. The booking. It's already pretty thin because it's all Tony. And if they're going to now have a fifth hour they're already at 3 hours. If they're going to add a fourth and fifth hour of television, we've talked about this before, he can still oversee it, but it's probably time that he gets some help.
Mm-hmm.
And my suggestion would be, if Tony still has final say on everything, kind of like how Vince does, and Tony can still book the big stuff on each show, but he probably needs someone to help him with the underneath stuff.
Yeah, I think that's fair. What I'm worried about at the moment is, and we've seen this come out, is like basically his two right-hand men are Sanjay Dutt and QT Marshall. And those guys are both involved in angles on TV. I mean, they just did like QTV on Rampage. And I would heavily argue both guys should not be on TV. And they're in a bunch of cornball programs. So I don't know how good of bookers they are, but I 100% agree that he does need to find more people. I'm just hoping he finds the right people. Though I do think what he has going for him is just the fact that like when CM Punk comes back, like Punk is heavily involved in his own programs. And, like, whether you love him or hate him, he's had some of the best, probably, programs in AEW. So he'll be able to, like, contribute in that way, you know, like his feud with MJF. So that should help out a bit.
I would agree. And it kind of goes into hand in hand with the fact that they're probably going to do some sort of soft roster split, which I know people are some people hate the idea of. But I think that's one way of protecting themselves from overexposing talent. And also from, you know, as we talked about months ago, potentially running into issues with contracted talent who are like, wait a minute, you know, I was never, you only booked me for X number of dates a year. You're now, you know, I'm over my limit. I think the soft roster split, it doesn't have to be anything official. You don't have to sit there and say we're splitting the rosters or anything like that. But you need to probably do something where it's at least a soft split internally behind the scenes within the within your booking sheet so that, A, you're not overexposing talent. B, these guys don't have awful schedules where they leave to go on the road on Tuesday and then they're on the road, you know, through Saturday. They fly home Sunday to fly back out Tuesday for the following week's Dynamite. I mean, because if they're going to tape Collision Live on Saturday, you would have guys leaving to be on the road, like leaving on Tuesday for Wednesday TV. Maybe they would fly home Thursday, but if they did, they'd have to fly right back out on Friday for Saturday TV and then fly home Sunday to be home Monday only to fly out Tuesday again. You can't have talent on both shows. It would just be an awful, awful schedule. Like, there's no way you can have talent on both shows. Maybe every once in a while somebody can appear on both shows within a given week, but I think some sort of soft roster split where maybe you just split it by program. It's not even necessarily a roster split where this person is on this show and this person isn't on the other show. Let's say you have a feud. You have a program between MJF and CM Punk. And on week one, whatever they're doing that week is on Dynamite. And then the next week, it's on Collision. Mm-hmm. And then the next week, it's on Collision again. But it's not on both shows. Do you know what I mean? You could do it like that, or you could say, okay, this program is going to be a Collision program. So CM Punk, for the next 6 weeks, you are going to be on Collision. You're not going to be on Dynamite. And then when that program is over, you may go into a feud with Jericho, and that may be a Dynamite feud. And you can kind of do it that way. Either way, they've got to do some sort of split, or else, I mean, this is good. It's going to get crazy, I think, with some of the schedules.
Yeah, I think they would run into the issue of kind of multiple times in WWE, like, gave up on the brand split, and you would have guys like Seth Rollins, like, literally wrestling, like, 90 matches a year on TV. So you just get, I just remember getting so, like, Seth, crazy talented, but like, I just never want to see another Seth Rollins match and Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, because there was just years of, they were on Raw, then they were on SmackDown, then they're on the pay-per-view, then they're on Raw, then they're on SmackDown, just, whereas like, but AEW, and I think Tony Khan obviously won't do that, but he's had the opposite problem where people just, you know, he'll disappear for weeks at a time. So I'm assuming he'll be good about not doubling up people. I mean, I think you do it once in a, say like when Kenny Omega was betrayed by Don Callis, you could have him show up the next time just because it's such a big pressing issue. But yeah, I would say like 90% of the time, just like kind of avoid doubling up people on that show.
What do we think this does to attendance with just extra shows? I don't think it does much if they don't go back to the same markets over and over again. Maybe it does. I mean, maybe, yeah. I don't think they can rely on the same markets that they've been hitting now. They almost have to do more international, go into Canada more, go to the UK more, do something to try. I mean, if you're running two live TVs a week, you need to try to not hit the same market more, I think, than twice in a year. I think that should be the goal. Or else you do run the risk of overexposure in those markets and then ticket sales suffering. Some markets, maybe you can do three.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to kind of do more shows in Canada and the UK. I don't know. Maybe I'm just over worried for them that I'm like, I wonder if they'll get down to like 2,000 people per show from what do they usually do, like 4,000 or 5,000? Just the fact that they keep coming back. And the brand's just not as hot as it's ever been right now. I don't think like, you know, people are rejecting what's going on, but I think that could be a big sell to get people to go to the same AEW event like 3-4 times a year if that's what they're planning on.
Yeah, I just think about it like in the Boston market where I am. At one point, they were coming here pretty frequently. They've had a pretty long break since the last time they've been here, and now they're not coming back to Boston University, the arena there, which they've only run here. I think the last time they were here was last summer. I think it was last, maybe in the fall. Excuse me. And that's like a 6,000 or 7,000 seat building for wrestling. I think it's 6,000 for hockey. It's probably 6,500 for wrestling. Mm-hmm. Now, when they come back in July, they're running TD Garden, which is the big Bruins and Celtics arena where WWE runs. So I wonder if some of this television money is also going to potentially allow them to roll the dice a little bit more and rent the bigger buildings where it which cost a little more money. But if you're going to the same markets too often, you run the risk of not selling out those buildings. Like WWE sells out the Garden when they come for TV most of the time. If they come for SmackDown or Raw, they don't come to the building more than twice a year. And I think AEW is going to have to get into the same type of schedule where, you know, like I said, maybe New York, Chicago, maybe Los Angeles, you can get up to three times a year, depending on the building you run. Mm-hmm. But really, I think they've got to look at capping it to twice a year in some of these markets, or else I think the crowds will absolutely suffer.
Yeah, I mean, it's potential to get bad because they're doubling the amount of shows. I mean, they're going from 52 to 104. So yeah, that's I don't know. I feel that could get tricky, but maybe, you know, it'll catch on. People will be into the Saturday show and it'll be like an event, and, you know, maybe people will, you know, have that night free to go. So we'll see, but I think there is definitely potential that they're just like watering down their product.
We don't think that Tony's announcement is anything other than this television deal, right? I mean, all he has teased is a big announcement on Thursday.
I would assume it would have to be, yeah, because like what they did with Miro and Thunder Rosa last week, and then he's like, hey, we have so much talent here. Like, I think we could do more. Like, stay tuned like to next week. It was something to the effect of that.
Yeah, so I would imagine that's what this ends up being. Again, if you're listening live and you want to jump on the show, 515-605-9345. If you're not listening live but you want to talk to us next week, we are recording this on Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. That would make it 6 p.m. Pacific. Same phone number, though, 515-605-9345. You can jump on the show. Let's see. Oh, the other thing I wanted to hit on. This is the bad that I had an issue with
over
the weekend.
Yeah.
Did you see the match that MJF had over the weekend?
I saw photos of it. I did not see the actual match, no.
I watched the actual match today.
Mm.
So MJF made an appearance on a Create a Pro Wrestling show, which is, I think, where he was trained. It's where his first matches
it
took place, okay? From what I understand, it was an unannounced – well, it was an advertised appearance, I think, but it was not advertised that he was going to wrestle. There was a wrestler by the name of Leo Sparrow who was trash-talking the fans. MJF's music played, interrupted him. MJF grabbed the mic and basically ran down this guy. He was Leo Sparrow. And then they had a little impromptu match. And then MJF cut a promo after the match and thanked everybody and thanked Creative Pro Wrestling and everything else. I don't really know where to start with this. I guess I'll say this.
Yeah.
If this is what pro wrestling is now, I don't know that I'm a fan of pro wrestling anymore as much as I'm a fan of what pro wrestling was.
Sure.
Because I think I'd love to know what was going through Tony Khan's mind when he okayed this for a number of reasons. First and foremost, what if he gets hurt?
Yeah, yep.
Forget everything else. Let's just start with what if he gets hurt? This guy barely wrestles on your television show, but you okay him wrestling on an indie show against, theoretically, a much more inexperienced wrestler, and not forget who he's in there with. I mean, I don't mean to disrespect Leo Sparrow, but, you know, who knows what could happen? What if a kick goes awry and he gets kicked in the head? What if we've seen people tear their quads walking? I mean, what if he goes to do a move and he lands wrong and he blows? Yeah. John Cena tore his pec giving a hip toss. Like, what happens if he goes to do a move and he lands wrong and he blows out his ACL? You got a pay-per-view in 2 weeks. And you run the risk of your world champion not being available to that show because he wanted to go back to the indie promotion that trained him and do a spot. I have no issue with him showing up and cutting a promo. I have no issue with him showing up, cutting a promo, and maybe even hitting this guy with a move. But
yeah,
a full-fledged match? I thought that was incredibly dumb for Tony to allow it. And I'm going to – we gave plenty of love to Tony earlier. He's getting $1 billion now. Great move. Great idea. Great job.
Good job.
Job well done.
Yeah.
But allowing your champion to go wrestle on an indie show just because he wanted to – I mean, again, we said it last week with Matt Hardy. He needs to learn when to say no, right? Yeah, he needs to learn when to say no. I mean, thankfully it didn't happen. But if what – and I hate to play the what-if game, but what if something went wrong? What if he blew out his knee? What if he took a kick to the head and he has a concussion? All this stuff which could have happened – it's a physical thing they were doing. All this stuff could have happened, and he would have lost the main event to his pay-per-view. He would have lost his world champion, the hottest guy in the company. For what? For what possibly did AEW have to gain from that? Zero. Nothing. They gained nothing from allowing MJF to do that. I'm sorry.
No, if MJF was unable to make this pay-per-view main event, it would be by far – it's already arguably the weakest pay-per-view main event they've ever had, like in terms of star power. Actually, I'm sure it is. The only other one that would be close would be Kenny Omega, Orange Cassidy, and Pac, I believe was a main event way back in the day. But if you lose MJF from that and you just have Jungle Boy, Darby Allin, Sammy Guevara, that's a rough sell to try to get people to pay $50. I mean, I know you would say like, oh, whoever wins.
It's not even a main event for Dynamite.
No, I mean, they basically did. Yeah. And the versions they've been doing have not been drawing that well. So yeah, they would be in a lot of trouble to not be able to finish that storyline. And yeah, it seems like, I mean, it would make more sense if it was going to happen that you would do it after the pay-per-view. Like, hey, if he gets hurt, then he'll still have 2 months to be ready for the next event. But yeah, coming up. I would very be curious, like, unless MJF, I don't know. I mean, maybe he just, like, that was part of his negotiations. Like, hey, Tony, you're going to pay me a ton of money, and once or twice a year, you're going to let me get back to create a pro, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it was. And I guess if he had to do that to get MJF back, then I understand it.
Yeah.
I just think it's ridiculous. The timing of it was awful. Like I said, at some point, Tony has to look at this and say, what does the company have to gain from allowing you to do this? Because the answer to that was zero. Like, they didn't gain anything. The only thing I can think of as a comparison is all the way back, this is probably like 2009, 2010, John Cena made an indie appearance for a promotion that I think his dad either was working for or owned.
I was thinking of that, too.
I was at that show.
Oh, you were. Oh, that's right.
That
was
It's like 15 minutes from where I live, but he didn't wrestle a match. He was the guest referee. He did a spot with Brian Milanis, who ended up in Ring of Honor years later. I think it was Brian Milanis gave him a, I don't know, it was a belly to belly or something like that. You know, some one move basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vince McMahon came down. Cena FU'd Vince. It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like Cena was involved, but he wasn't. He wasn't wrestling a match, okay? And it was fine. That's probably the only comparison I can really think of something like this. But Cena didn't wrestle a match. Also, which means because Cena wasn't wrestling a match, he wasn't selling for Leo Sparrow, which is what MJF was doing.
Oh,
he was
really
selling for the guy. Like, at one point, the guy had offense. And yes, like, Cena, I think, sold for Milanis in that thing. But Brian Milanis was 350 pounds. Like, Brian Milanis was a big dude.
Got to Google this dude.
So, Leo Sparrow, no offense to Leo Sparrow. Leo Sparrow looks like if he was at an AEW show this week, he's not in the ring. He's sitting in the front row.
Oh, it looks like he was like squashed by Omos on a, you know, one of those jobber matches. So, that's his probably biggest claim to fame in front of a national audience.
So, and again, like, no offense to the guy, but he looks like he'd be a kid sitting in the front row if he was at an AEW show. And the AEW World Champion is selling. Like, I get it. It's fake. I get it. Because that's going to be what people are. I can already read the emails now. Oh, you blew up over nothing. It was all in for fun. It's wrestling. Come on, don't get so upset. It's simulated sport. You're supposed to be trying to draw money. Your world champion, who looks great now, by the way, because he's like chiseled out of stone,
is amazing.
Selling for a guy who looks like he'd be selling popcorn at an AEW show. Like, I just thought it was dumb.
Oh, man. Guess how many followers Leo Sparrow has on Twitter.
$1,800. I short sold him a little bit.
You did a little bit, but that's. It's not like he's a. It's right. I know it's not like he's like an indie darling either. Where it's like, you know, this guy's the next big thing. He'll probably be in AEW soon. Like, it'll get people talking. So yeah, no offense to Leo Sparrow, which is the catchphrase of the night. I'd never heard of him before.
I'm sure he's a great guy.
He's probably a wonderful guy. I'm sure
Yeah, I'm sure he's a great guy.
He looks very
nice. But the AEW World Champion should not be selling for him 2 weeks before pay-per-view on an indie show. It shouldn't happen. There's no reason for it to happen from AEW standpoint. Like, and this is where I think sometimes Tony, like, I don't know if he just doesn't. The only thing I think of is he doesn't want to say no to people. The talent can really do whatever they want. Although he apparently said no to the Bucks at one point because they were doing creative and that stopped.
Yeah.
But like I said, your world champion should not be selling for a guy who looks like he would be the popcorn vendor if he came to one of your shows. But
no,
that should not happen. No, if you wanted to do the match, fine. You know, if he came out and Leo Sparrow was running down the crowd and MJF wanted to come down and shut him up, you know what he should have done? It should have been 15 seconds. He should have come in, thrown a couple of punches, hit him with one move, 1, 2, 3, roll him out of the ring, and then MJF can cut his promo. That's all it needed to be. That's all it needed to be.
The thing is, too, just like looking at it aesthetically, like this, it makes MJF look less because this just looks like a show. I don't know, 400 people. It just looks like
Yeah. Well, because they didn't advertise. Like, it wasn't even advertised that he was going to be in the match. Like, that's the other thing.
Oh.
Did it even help create a pro? I don't believe this was an advertised match. So,
okay.
Did it even help create a pro wrestling?
I guess create a pro did, but that's no benefit to Tony Khan. Oh, yeah, 20 minutes. Oh, this is a 20-minute match? Looks like YouTube. Yeah, it's a 20-minute match.
There was another match. There was another match before it, I believe.
Okay.
And then MJF, I think he was cutting a promo, and then MJF came out after that. But the MJF portion of the match, I mean, it was still a decently long match. It wasn't like it was 5 seconds.
Yeah.
It was a 20-minute segment.
Okay. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I was just like kind of scrolling through the clip. Interesting. Okay. Oh, boy. I don't get it.
The only thing I can think of.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the only thing I can think of.
Okay.
Is MJF said, look, I'm not wrestling very much in TV. We have a pay-per-view coming up in a couple of weeks. I want to get some reps in, right?
Oh, sure. Okay.
So can I go get some reps in a match, which Tony could have agreed to. But Tony also could have made sure, yeah, you can get your reps in, but I don't want it on their show, which it was apparently on some sort of show. I mean, I was watching video of it, and there was a logo in the corner. It was on their YouTube page. It's become a big story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, that's what didn't have to happen. And maybe it was a big show for Creative Pro. I'm not even sure. But I'm sitting here with the clip running as we're talking, and I'm watching MJF sell for a guy that looks like he cleans the bathrooms in the buildings that AEW, you know, does it. No offense to Leo Sparrow.
No offense to Leo Sparrow.
Yeah, it's going to be the line of the night.
He's in much better shape than me, yeah. So.
Same here. But the AEW World Champion should not be selling for him. It shouldn't happen. And he didn't do a ton. I mean, it's not like Leo Sparrow was, you know, working him over or anything like that.
Yeah.
But he still sold for the guy. He still took some kicks. He still sold for the guy. Like, it wasn't like it was a 15-second squash. If he's your world champion and he's fighting some guy on an indie show, it should be a 15-second squash. Like, what are we doing?
I'm kind of speechless because, I'm just, like, looking at his page. And again, no offense to Leo Sparrow, but, yeah, when you have, like, 1,800 followers.
Four times.
I mean, I don't know.
That's gonna be the title of this episode. Just no offense to Leo Sparrow.
That got me. But I mean, you know, just look at like I don't know. I think I had like 500 or 600 followers when I was tweeting, and I'm a nobody. And you would think if you're gonna do something like that, you would want somebody with at least like I don't know 20,000-30,000. Somebody's on the up and up. I mean, maybe he's on the up and up now, but maybe not.
Leo Sparrow just hit a moonsault for a near fall.
Oh.
On the AEW World Champion. And again, what could have gone wrong? I don't know. Maybe he over-rotates and he knees MJF in the face. Like, a million things could have gone wrong. Like, this was a full-fledged match. Anything could have gone wrong here. What's
I mean,
the upside of it? Like, I would love to get in Tony's head and say, just dude, like, what was, why did you agree to this? What was the upside of letting Leo Sparrow almost choke out your world champion on an indie show 2 days before, 2 weeks before pay-per-view?
Yeah.
Now, what was the mindset? I want a reasonable explanation for why this was allowed to happen, because there isn't one. There is, I don't care. We're going to get emails about this because I'm so fired up about it.
Yeah. That's fine.
If you're trying to defend this, I'm going to get out in front of it. If you're going to call in or write in and try to defend this, you are wrong. You're just wrong. Right away. Don't even try.
Don't try it.
This should not be allowed to happen.
We're open to like tons of ideas on this show. It's all about conversations. But on this one, it's just no. Absolutely not. Michael will get very upset. Warned.
Yeah. I hope this doesn't happen again. I'm scrolling through here, but this is like, you know, it's got to be a 6, 7, 8 minute match.
Yeah.
Where MJF sold kind of a lot, sold way more than he should have. And if you take all of that, and again, the defense of it is going to be, it's pro wrestling, Mike. Like, it's not real. It's okay if he sold. It's not gonna hurt pay-per-view. It's not going to do this. It's just, it doesn't look good. Like, at some point.
Well, yeah.
You need to operate your business the right way.
Well, my counter then would be like, well, do you think, what would you say if Roman Reigns went to Create a Pro and fought Leo Sparrow for 10 minutes.
That's the thing. The people that will defend this will be the people that would be like, how embarrassing that they sent Roman Reigns to an indie show. 100%. And that's what I get that. There's a segment of the AEW audience that I almost feel bad when we talk like this, because I think people think we are defending WWE, and that's not the case at all, because their product is terrible as well.
Yeah.
But there's a certain segment of that audience that the company they like, AEW, can do no wrong. Anything they do is the right move. They do no wrong, and everything WWE does is an embarrassment and it's awful. And that's just, I guess that's going to exist forever, because I see it all the time and I don't see it changing.
No, yeah, I mean, it seems to be getting worse. But like, just like via scrolling through like Reddit and whatnot, and different like wrestling message boards, I just see a lot of, you know, this is my team tribalism sort of thing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just like from an aesthetic point, like, and this goes back like a few years ago, but like when we would watch Impact and it looked like semi-professional most of the time, and then they would do matches from like high school gyms, and we were like, that's bad. Like, don't do that. It makes your brand look bad. And I would just say like, hey, just protect the brand. Like if MJF's going to do something like that, it should be a bigger show, probably a different opponent. No offense, Leo Sparrow, but like just find, you know, somebody of a different, who's more on the up and up and not getting squashed by Omos in 2 seconds.
When I send Wade the description for this show to put with the podcast, the first line is just going to be no offense to Leo Sparrow, but I just watched a ref bump. MJF
got
Yeah, it's just playing here in the background. Just got low blowed. They're doing a funny spot with a chair now. Like, it's just, again.
Oh, yeah.
This should not have been competitive at all. And I'm sure the live crowd at the show loved it. I'm sure they did. Because they saw something incredible happen that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they would love it. I mean, people went crazy when Vince McMahon came out at that indie show and Cena, you know, gave him the FU or the attitude adjustment, whatever it was called.
When you went to that show, did you know like John Cena was going to be guest referee, or was that a surprise?
Yes. Yeah, that was advertised. Yeah, that was advertised. The Vince thing nobody knew about.
That's insane. Like, what was that? What was that like?
People went ballistic. The Vince thing was the big surprise when the Vince music played. I remember, I think from what I recall, it took him like 30 seconds to come out or whatever. So I remember thinking and saying to the buddy that I was with, like, it's not real. Like, it's going to be, you know, somebody dressed as Vince or whatever. Like, you don't think it's real. Like, you think they're just doing something where they're going to fake Vince coming out. Because, I mean, like, Vince isn't going to show up at an indie show in Newburyport, Massachusetts, or wherever the hell it was.
Yeah.
But there he was. He was there. And when he came out, the place went ballistic.
That's crazy. And maybe people think it's, like, hypocritical. And, one, I don't like Vince McMahon at all. I rant about him almost every week. But I think that was probably – that's kind of a cool thing for him to do. But also, like, Vince McMahon at the time was, like, 60 years old, not in a big program with anyone.
Not the world champion.
Yeah, and John Cena was the one beating him up. So it's not
– Yeah.
You can't really compare the situations.
So the match – I just got to the end of the match. And I watched this earlier, too, and I forgot about this. But this is what I was going to really complain about. MJF gets the win by tap out. And right before the tap out, needed to distract the referee and hit Leo Sparrow with a low blow to get the tap out. So not only did MJF won the match, but technically had to cheat to beat Leo Sparrow.
I mean, I guess that's the main event of our next pay-per-view. Yeah. We're going to need a rematch to really settle it then.
I mean, yeah, he should be owed a rematch if we follow the wrestling rule book, yeah. He should be owed a rematch. He was screwed!
He was screwed! All right, and now I got Raw on the side, so Jinder Mahal just came out, so.
Oh, he's back? He's still, I thought he got fired.
Jinder Mahal? No.
I'm kidding. He just hasn't been around in forever.
Yeah, I think they sent him to NXT for a bit, and now he's back on Raw, so maybe this time he'll catch on.
All right, let's get to emails. Let's see here. Zach in Texas, AEW's big renewals. His fellows on Wednesday at the network up fronts for TNT TBS, a new deal between Warner Brothers and AEW is expected to be announced. While that exact number is not known, the rumored figure of $1 billion over 5 years is just wild. Pause for a minute and think back 5 years. Could you ever have imagined there would be not only a mostly better booked and imminently better wrestled competitor to WWE, but one that would also make $1 billion or close to it? It's pretty amazing to think about. For his fault, and I'm sorry, I lost my place here. For his fault, Tony Khan. See, I'm so fired up about Leo Sparrow.
Fired up about Leo Sparrow.
Tony Khan has to get credit for bringing his vision alive and pretty successfully navigating the minefield in his pro wrestling. Yeah, I mean, again, nothing but praise. I mean, he's got a $1 billion television deal coming. I mean, I think there are faults there, Andrew, but at the end of the day, he did it. I mean, this was the goal. He did it.
Yeah. Now and then I do have to remind myself, just like, we had crappy WWE. Well, it's still crappy most of the time, but we had really bad WWE for 20 years, and there was, like, nothing you could do about it. I mean, we watched, like, Impact, but you knew they were never going to grow. So, like, I remember, like, hearing all the rumors of, like, Chris Jericho might join this new company and Jim Ross, and it just sounded, like, too good to be true. And it actually happened. So as much as, like, their shows can frustrate it, it's, like, overall, it's still pretty cool that it's a thing.
Zach continues, a quick word about the firm deletion. I'm not surprised y'all hated it, but was it that bad?
Yes.
It was mostly harmless fun. I'm sure we all have that campy movie that's no cinematic classic we all love. This is not that different. It was mindless camp kept away from the more serious elements of AEW. But see, again, Zach, that would be my issue. AEW is supposed to be a more serious product. Therefore, this sort of camp has no place on their show. And again, I would bring it back to this. If WWE still had Matt Hardy and they were doing the exact same thing, I am sure people would be sitting there going, oh my God, can you believe they're letting Matt Hardy do this awful thing on television? This is one of those things where I think if AEW is in the corner of the screen, there are AEW fans that are going to go, oh, it wasn't that bad. Come on, you guys are overreacting. If there was WWE logo in the corner of the screen, it would be, oh, my God, what an embarrassment.
Yeah, I mean, I'm somebody who loves camp. Like, I love The Room and Troll 2, and I was watching some Joe Esteves films this past week, and, like, I like So Bad It's Good, but that's its own thing. Like, if I'm watching, like, an episode of Succession, and they do, like, an 30 minutes worth of just camp and, like, they suddenly have powers and can, like, teleport through time, I would say that's really stupid. That should not be part of the show. And I will argue that's the same thing with wrestling. Nobody should have supernatural powers. Like, Nobody should be able to teleport. Nobody should be able to have a drone that can display their face and turn time. Like, they went from afternoon to midnight. So then why does he not use his dumb superpowers all the time and become champion? It's freaking – now I'm getting riled up. It's just so stupid. I hate it. I hate it.
I agree. Chad in Nebraska, he says, hey, my friends, with AEW, I thought last week's show was a big step up in regards to the previous handful of Dynamites. I would say AEW shows, but I haven't watched Rampage in months. I thought Moxley and Omega cage match was one of their better main events in a long while. Am I wrong? And again, I don't watch Being the Elite or Rampage, but is it just me or is Callis' turn on Kenny really sudden, especially as Callis doesn't fit in the Black Belt Combat Club at all? Yeah, I mean, we didn't even really talk about the booking. I feel like over the last couple of weeks, we haven't really talked about the show very much at all because there's been so much, you know, business side of stuff that's been happening. Yeah. But yeah, what did you think of the cage match? What did you think of Kenny Omega getting, or excuse me, Don Callis turning on Kenny Omega?
I didn't feel it was crazy sudden because, Callis has been, like, messing with Omega a little bit. Like, he did that thing with Hangman Page where he, like, fell to the ground and claimed, like, Hangman did it to him. So that was a few weeks back, and we've seen him like kind of get closer to Takeshita. So it kind of seemed like maybe he was going to turn on him at some point, and just the fact that he was like more involved in general. I enjoyed it. I'm curious what's going to happen next. I also don't know for sure if he's going to join the BCC. I'm not entirely opposed to that, but I think it could be a bad fit. But yeah, no, I think it's just, yeah, whatever the follow-up is, but otherwise strong main event, and yeah, I'm looking forward to where it's going next.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know that it was necessarily Don Callis joining the BCC. In fact, I don't think that it was, because Brian Danielson even said on commentary that he had no idea what was happening. Mm-hmm. I think it was more of just him turning on Omega, and we'll see where that goes. Chad continues. He says, Meltzer said that Darby Allin wants to climb Mount Everest. I could make so many comments on that, but I'm going to be a nice guy and keep it to myself. On Impact, Chad says, another good episode, and I like that the Knockouts are main eventing more, and that Impact is not making a big deal about it. I don't know why, but again, I find myself laughing at the stupid Johnny Swinger comedy gimmicks each week. I know that Macklin is a badass heel that doesn't need a cheat to win, while the Rhino build-up video about his championship wins was nice. I think they could have done that a couple more weeks to build him up a little bit more. Speedball is in the best of the Super Juniors in New Japan, and I haven't looked yet on Impact Plus, but I think I heard Tom Hannafin say that you could watch Bayley's matches on the app if you subscribe to Impact Plus. I do think that is a nice touch. Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Again, I was gone last week, but I think that I think that Scott DeMore is listening to the show, as we had a Steven Seagal reference a week after Mike read his Wikipedia history on the air. The only other thing from 2 weeks ago I really liked was that since the Motor City Machine Guns aren't going after the tag titles, Shelley and Saban just mentioned it quickly on air and didn't break up, which is the trend that happens in every single company, it seems. Mike and Andrew, I did get an email that you can now buy Santino Marella NFTs, so take that with you. P.S. Darby and Danhausen need to be fired and stay on Mount Everest.
Wow.
Well, it's only if he takes Danhausen with him to Mount Everest.
That's chilly up there. Yeah, after he said that, I was like looking up people who have climbed to the top of Everest, and surprisingly, like a couple thousand people have done it. So it's not like I could never do it.
A couple thousand? I wouldn't have guessed it. Yeah, no, you could.
Yeah, but there's like tours that go up there. So it's not like this most insane daredevil thing, because you just like need to have a lot of money. And it still takes a lot, but it's not like, you know, it's not him going up by himself and like sitting at the top hill. Yeah. But good luck.
I wouldn't
good luck,
Darby.
Yeah.
Jose from Golden Valley also emails in. He says, every time Tony Khan does those backstage segments with freaky eyes, it reminds me of a hostage video where a terrorist gives a warning to his victims. Sorry. Tony needs to start dipping. I think that the nicotine would help him focus. 9 days from tonight, tell you what, spit. Spitting is like doing a dip spit, I guess.
I'll tell you what. Yeah.
I just picture him, if Tony were to do that, he'd be like the old school tobacco chewing people that would like spit into like the canteen. You get the, like, you know what I mean? The old Western movie. Like,
yeah. With this, yeah, the spittoon. I'd be down for that. Yeah.
Sorry. Jose says, Jungle Boy recently said that he doesn't like doing promos and would rather do a 30-minute match instead of talking. Okay. I don't think that's a good idea, but you think you have to cut promos.
Got it.
I tried comparing this to real life. Hold on. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. He's talking about Jungle Boy. I was confused. Let me restart that.
Sure.
Jungle Boy recently, I didn't realize this was all one thought because it was a separate paragraph. Jungle Boy recently said that he doesn't like doing promos and would rather do 30-minute matches. I tried comparing this to real life. Not Mike's real life that relates to wrestling pop culture, but actual real life. Like, bro, imagine you're the boss of a job and an employee says, hey, you know that part of my job that is integral to the job being done well? I don't enjoy doing it, and I'll never be good at it. Why the hell would you ever want to give opportunities to that guy? There are plenty of wrestlers who have been bad to mediocre on the mic and have gotten really good. If Jungle Boy is just settling with being bad and never getting better, then why the hell should AEW ever push him again? These guys grew up on the indie tapes of the 2010s WWE featuring Punk and Danielson at their most popular. Daniel Bryan is like a god to these generic flippy kids. Yet they all conveniently ignore that Bryan went out and got acting lessons outside of WWE so that he could improve his character and work on the mic. This generation of young guys treats it as a performance art, not like a real fight. They look for the Friday morning Observer star ratings as validation and not focus on the dollars and cents business. The guys before them had beaten into them to respect the industry. 85% of the young guys today would have been eaten alive and ran off by 1999's APA or the 1994 Steiners. Lastly, Andrew. Okay, this is a new topic. He's directing this at you.
Yep.
I was disappointed by the answer to Stephen King's mystery. The bar for what's considered profanity is so low, as someone mentioned months ago, Andrew's horror, comedy, and now vulgarity interests need some spice. Also, cue up Andrew's go-to line of, that's very hurtful. End
very
quote.
Hurtful. Yes.
A drinking game for the show should be taking a shot every time he says the line. Do you say that a lot? I haven't picked up on that.
I say it in real life a lot. I didn't realize I said it on the show. I guess probably would. I don't know. I must. It's a weird thing. I don't know where I got it from, but I'll tell people. I'm like, oh, that was really hurtful and unnecessary.
It's funny that people are picking up on these things, and yet we have the conversations every week, and like I haven't picked up on that at all.
Yeah, there's something else a few months ago that somebody told me that I always said, and I was like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that. I can't remember what it was. It was probably Jose, too, that, like, pointed out.
Yeah, I remember somebody saying something about the both of us, and then I was, like, cognitively trying to trying to make sure I didn't say it.
Yes.
I was very cognizant of it and tried not to repeat it for, like, the next couple of weeks. But I think I forgot about it.
In my defense, I don't think I could say what the thing was from that Stephen King book. I could only use the initials. I can't say that on the podcast, in my defense.
Yeah, because if we don't want to have that E put next to us. I think that's the issue. I think that does something with advertisers and whatever. It makes it more difficult. So we have to try to keep it somewhat clean. I know in the probably 300 of these we've done, I've definitely let some things slip through just because it's the way I talk.
Yeah.
Without knowing it, by the way, every once in a while I will listen back just to, I'll listen like the first 10 minutes of the show just to make sure the audio sounds good once the podcast feed goes up. And there have been times where I'm like, ooh, man, I dropped an F-bomb there. I didn't even realize I did that.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It hasn't happened often, but every once in a while I'm like, ooh, boy, I didn't know I did that. Okay.
I don't think I've dropped an F-bomb yet, but the S-word, if you will. Actually, I don't even know if that's I guess that's more fun.
I didn't even know if that
counts. Yeah, I was like, you couldn't use it on TV at all. Anyways, like maybe a couple of those slipped. But maybe it's no.
I hear it on TV all the time. Just watch AEW.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe that
should
be our bar. If they say it on AEW, we can say it on the show. I don't really know.
I love it.
Do you know what time it is now?
Ooh, I hope it's what I'm thinking of.
$5 challenge.
Yes.
I almost hit the wrong one.
Well, that would have been interesting.
Yeah, we almost heard this instead.
What's your next question, Kylan?
Okay, question number two.
Are you drunk?
Oh, wow.
Don't know where that's a clip from, but there it is. It's right underneath in alphabetical order to the clip for the $5 challenge, and I almost clicked on it by mistake.
Huh. I have no idea. Yeah.
No idea what that's from. Sounds like an old Pat McNeil show, maybe?
It did? Yeah.
Maybe? I don't know. Okay, let's go to Zach's first. Zach is famous first is his theme. These have been fun. I like these. He's going to give us five championships, and we have to tell him the first champion to hold that belt.
Love it. Piece of cake.
He also says, good luck and pay attention.
Pay attention? That's terrible.
Which may mean that one of these could be a which may mean that one of these could be somewhat of a trick question, maybe.
Okay, I'll stop watching Cody Rhodes. I don't know. He's worked up about something. I don't have the sound on, but I basically leave it on for the one time he's going to set himself on fire.
All right, number one. Who was the first European champion?
Do you know?
I'm not 100% positive, but I'm like 85% positive it was Shawn Michaels.
Shawn was my first guess, too.
All right, then. I think it was they did a tournament during a European tour, and I think the finals were Bulldog and Shawn in London, if I remember correctly. And everybody thought Bulldog was going to win because it was in his hometown, and then Michaels won.
Okay. I like it.
Okay. The first WWE Cruiserweight Champion.
I should definitely know this. I mean,
It must have been when it came back, because before it was called the Light Heavyweight Championship.
So
this must have been after the Invasion.
Yeah, and when they brought okay.
That's when they did Cruiserweight. I think they had their Light Heavyweight Championship before that with like Takamichi Noku and stuff like that. But they was never called a Cruiserweight Championship.
So I think, X-Pac and Kidman were like feuding and they each have their title. So I'm assuming at some point they merged them. But I'm also wondering, is he talking about like in 2016 when they brought it back and like TJP won it in the tournament?
That's a good question. I'm going to say the original, like, 2003 one, because it's the first.
Yeah, my memory is hazy. I feel like they just merged them at some point. Rey Mysterio, maybe? He joined in 2002?
Wait a minute.
Oh.
Maybe this is what he means by pay attention, because WWE Cruiserweight Championship... It would not, when they merged it after the Invasion, it would not have been WWE. That would have been WWE.
Okay.
So I think it's got to be, I think you're right. I think it's got to be, it was TJP, right? TJ Perkins?
Yeah.
It's got to be him if it's the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. Because I think when it was originally merged, it would have been WWF still.
Here's a side question. An honest question. Does the Cruiserweight title still exist in WWE?
I don't think so.
Okay, I was like, maybe it's in NXT or something, or it was on UK, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. You know what? Isn't it on NXT? Isn't it part of NXT now?
I feel like I moved there, but I guess I don't. I never watch NXT, so I don't know if it's like still a thing. Still,
yeah.
Defended.
Because it was WWE didn't happen, I think, until 2002, and
yeah.
They would have merged it and used it in WWF in 2001.
Yeah, it must have been merged by the end of the Invasion angle, which ended in November 2001. Yeah.
So the actual first WWE but here's the thing. The first WWE Cruiserweight Champion, right, could have technically been whoever was the champion when the company name was changed. Are we going too deep into this now? Are we overthinking this?
Because then it's somebody like a Rey Mysterio, Chavo Guerrero type. I would go TJP.
Okay.
He could also be, I mean, that's really tricky if it's something like that. know.
Yeah. Okay. Number three, the first World Tag Team Championship. Again, I would assume this is WWE's version or WWF's version after they were merged. Because at one point, the WWF and WCW tag titles were merged into the World Tag Team titles, and there was only one championship.
Oh, man.
I think that's going to be what he's talking about. Without a company identifier, that's my guess.
Yeah. Because, see, I'm like, what did they say in, like, the 80s? What did they call the tag titles? Was it just the – were they the World Tag Team Champions, or were they just, like, the WWF Tag Team Champions?
I think it was WWF and WCW, yeah.
Okay, so World didn't come into play until
– I don't think so.
I mean,
I'm going to guess this is the first champions after it was merged.
Okay.
Which, who would that have even been? I mean, I don't even know.
Either –
Dudley's, yeah. When did Edge and Hogan hold them?
Oh, God. 2002?
Would they have been the first? They didn't unify them, did they? No, the Dudley. I would have guessed. I'd guess the Dudleys. The Dudleys or the Hardys, probably.
Yeah, those are probably the safest bets.
Should we go Dudleys?
Let's go Dudleys, because I think Hardys weren't a team at the end of the invasion.
All right, then. Number four, the WWE United States Championship. Who was the first WWE United States Champion?
Oh, man. Yeah, this is tricky. So many
people feuded over this.
But is this the same thing where it was like, didn't they merge? No, they didn't merge that in Intercontinental.
No, they kept them separate. So, I mean, this could be like Benoit, JBL...
Yeah.
No, JBL was later. JBL and Benoit, I think, were both later, actually.
Well, didn't it disappear for a while and they reintroduced it on SmackDown and, like, had a tournament or something?
Yes. Yeah.
I bet it Booker T or Benoit, I think, or maybe Big Show even had it for a bit.
I was going to say Benoit.
Benoit seems like that. That was about the point in his career.
Number five, the first Divas Champion. And this is very specific, when they renamed it the Divas Champion.
Oh, that's okay.
Wasn't it
a good question.
I don't remember her name. She was Michelle McCool's partner in Lay Cool. Was it like Layla?
Layla Hirsch.
Was it her?
It could be. I'm guessing it was around that 2008 to 2011 era?
Yeah.
Somewhere in there?
That's what comes to mind, anyway.
I feel like just about pretty much everyone had that at some point. I'm cool with Layla.
All right, we'll go Layla. Okay. Number one, the first European champion, Shawn Michaels. We were correct.
Yes.
We're going to have to do some Googling here. The first WWE Cruiserweight Champion, we had TJP. He has Tajiri as the correct answer.
Okay, so that must be when they... That must be the other route. Yeah, like they brought it over to SmackDown. Or he merged it or something? Because I think that's the one... Yeah.
Yes, so April 21st, 2002, Tajiri beat Billy Kidman, and the title became the WWE Cruiserweight Championship on May 5th when the WWF became World Wrestling Entertainment. So Tajiri beat Billy Kidman on April 21st for the WWF Cruiserweight Championship, and then it changed to WWE on May 5th when Tajiri was still holding it. So.
Oh.
I guess that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
So we were wrong in assuming what exactly we were talking about there.
Yeah.
But he's also didn't technically, it's not technically a trick question because he was the first WWE Cruiserweight Champion.
We overthought it. Yeah.
We did. The first World Tag Team Champions, we had the Dudleys. We were not right on that one either. It was the Hurricane and Kane.
I wouldn't have guessed that in 20 guesses, probably.
Nope. Same here. The first WWE United States Champion, we had Chris Benoit. We're kind of close. Eddie Guerrero.
Oh, fellow radical. Okay.
Yeah. And the first Divas champion we had is Layla, also kind of close, but not exactly right. The correct answer, Michelle McCool.
Oh! Dang.
So not a good showing there. 1-4 we went on that one.
I thought, I was thinking we would.
Oh, one for five.
So. 1-5. Ouch.
Five. Oof. Okay. Let's see. Chad has one here. He says, nothing fancy, just this week's theme is Ultimate X. Number one, who is credited with coming up with the concept of the Ultimate X?
I should know this. I know I've heard it.
I have assumed it was like Jeff Jarrett or something.
Yeah, let's go Double J. I feel I've heard this, but I can't remember.
In 2004, who won the Ultimate X that was on the Best Damn Wrestling Show, period?
It's got to be Amazing Red, right?
It has to be. He's been our answer for everything, right?
We're like,
it's not Rob Terry.
It's
I
not,
know
Rob,
it's not
Terry.
Rob Terry.
T-Money was not in the country.
It's got to be Amazing
Company at that time.
It's got to be Amazing
Country. Yeah.
Number three, can you name who wrestled in the Elevation X in 2007 and 2008?
I'm blanking on what that was. The Elevation X?
I was going to say I don't even know what that was either.
Shoot. Who? So I wonder, like, are we guessing, like, six people? Do you think?
No, I don't think so.
Who was it?
No, hold on. Maybe just one. Who wrestled in Elevation X in 2007 and 2008? So maybe there's one person that was in both matches or something?
Maybe Suicide?
Works for me. Suicide. Number four. Yeah. Since you guys mentioned Amazing Red, for every DNA Impact question.
Dang it. So it's probably not Red, but.
Maybe it is. How many Ultimate X matches has he been in? Also, how many has he won? Amazing Red. He had to have been in four?
That's
five?
The exact number I was going to say, four.
Four?
I was going to say four and one win, but that's total guess.
All right, let's go with it. All right, number five. Who won the first ever Knockouts Ultimate X match at Hard to Kill 2022?
God, that wasn't that long ago.
Who won it? Jordan Grace, probably. I'm guessing. I don't remember. I remember them doing this match. I don't remember who won it.
I don't remember. Shoot.
This should be a gimme for us. It was a year ago.
I know. I'm cool with Jordan Grace. I don't think it's right, but I don't know who else it would be.
All right. Number one. Who's credited with coming up for the Ultimate X? We had Double J. It was Don Callis, apparently, so we're wrong on that one.
Got him.
2004, who won the Ultimate X? On the Best Damn Wrestling Show, period, we had Amazing Red. Nope, Chris Sabin.
What?
Can you name who wrestled in Elevation X in 2007 and 2008? We had Suicide. The correct answer was in 2000. So not really. It was two different matches. In 2007, Rhino beat AJ Styles, and in 2008, Rhino beat James Storm. So apparently, the answer was Rhino. He wrestled in both of them.
Oh, was that where it was like a scaffold match? Maybe. I feel like James Storm was in one of those, but I didn't think it was Rhino. I don't know.
Since you guys mentioned Amazing Red for every TNA question, how many Ultimate X matches have been in? How many has he won? We have said that he's been in four and that he's won one. We were very close. He's been in three and he's won one.
Oh, we get a half a point for that.
We definitely get a half a point for that.
Just so we don't
and then number five, the first women's or the Knockouts Ultimate X match. Tasha Steeles was the winner. We had Jordan Grace. We were wrong on that one. She beat Alicia Edwards, Jordan Grace, Lady Frost, Rosemary, and Chelsea Green. So Jordan Grace was in the match, but she didn't win it.
So we got a 0.5. This is not going well.
Okay. Last one. This is from Jose. And Jose thinks that you're going to get the first one. Okay. Okay. I'm reading his thing here. $5 challenge, Jose says. He says, I should call this the 1/5 challenge, since my hopes of shutting you guys out often fails when Mike's sudden real-life interactions prevent it from happening. Sports entertainment in the mainstream. The Undertaker. Tombstone to Turkey on an episode of The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon in 2015. Yes. I remember this happening. Who were the three main guests that night?
Okay.
Note, he says, I knew Andrew would get this right, so I worded the question differently.
Wow.
The three main guests the night that The Undertaker tombstoned Jimmy Fallon, the turkey on Jimmy Fallon.
Oh,
I
have no idea either. And why would I know three people? My guess
Rob
is
Terry.
Rob Terry's got to be one. And then I was going to guess, I know like Stephanie and Hunter were on once, but I don't know if it was just like a WWE.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's me,
if you had three guests.
Huh.
I mean, one of them's going to be Jimmy Fallon. I don't even know. I have no idea.
I was hoping he was just going to ask who was in the turkey suit, because I knew that, but
who was in the turkey suit?
Brad Maddox.
Was it Brad Maddox? That's what I thought. I mean, who would have been a guest? It could literally be anybody.
Like the Three Stooges? Like, why is it three? Steven Seagal.
Okay.
So that's a hot starter if you put in Steven Seagal. And then you would probably follow that up with Scott Baio. And then Danny Bonaducci.
Yeah, he'd be the number two.
Yeah.
Danny B. Okay, yeah. Yeah, he would be the third guy for sure.
Yeah, that's a solid show, though. I would watch that.
Number two, the Bella Twins appeared in what 2014 film? I don't. He might get us this week.
Transformers 5. Dark Side of the Light.
Dark Side of the Light. Okay.
Yeah.
Number three, what former world champion was a guest contestant in the NBC series Hollywood Game Night in 2016? I'm giggling because I think I know this.
Yes! I was thinking, I'm like, this one seems like one Mike might randomly know to save us.
I think my wife would watch this show. She liked it. She liked the show a lot. I am almost positive he was still with WWE at the time. I think it was Chris Jericho.
Oh, I like this. I like it.
I think we go Jericho. What New Japan star played Thug Number One in the CBS drama Scorpions? I watched Scorpions. I actually liked that show. I have no idea who played Thug Number One or who from New Japan was on that show. I have no idea. That was a pretty decent show.
I had never saw Scorpions. I can't even picture what that was.
It was about this group of people that would, like, they were essentially hackers, but they were like rogue hackers that would save people.
Oh, interesting.
There was a girl who was like a finalist on American Idol was on the show. I forget her name. Catherine McPhee, is that a name? Is that an actress?
That's a name. Yeah, I can't picture who she is.
let me see if I get that right. Hold on.
Yeah.
Scorpions. I'm not going to cheat and look up who from New Japan was on it. I just want to get this girl's name right. Not the German rock band. I'm not looking for the German rock band, Scorpions. No. I'm looking for the TV series. There it is. It's Catherine McPhee. Did I have it right? Catherine, I did have it right. Catherine McPhee.
Wow.
Look at that. Catherine McPhee. She's currently 39 years old. She's a singer and an actress.
Oh,
from the show Scorpions. Is Scorpion still on TV? I don't think it is. No, it was canceled.
Damn.
But way off track. New Japan star. I mean, I don't even. I have no idea. I have no idea.
I mean, do you know who Thug Number Two was? Maybe we could deduce from there. I just Tanahashi, Okada.
Yeah, sure. Tanahashi.
Oh, love it.
Number five, Batista made a guest appearance on what HBO TV series?
Oh, Room 104.
You came up with that quick. I think you must know it. What was Room 104? I don't remember the show.
It was from, it's like these two, like, indie brothers, the Duplass brothers. They, it was kind of a cool concept. Like, every episode was inside this hotel room, but it was, like, different people, different time area periods. It would, one week would be horror. The next week it would be, like, a comedy. So, it was, I mean, hit or miss, but it was a fun concept. But I remember I watched the first couple seasons and then remember seeing that Batista was going to be on a future episode. Did not see that one. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see how we did. Undertaker, Tombstone of Turkey on The Tonight Show. Who were the three guests that night? The three guests were, in order, James McAvoy. Oh, sorry, we had Steven Seagal, Scott Baio, and Danny Bonaduce. We were wrong.
What?
The correct answer was James McAvoy, Sam Smith, and Kurt Braunohler.
Why would I know that?
I have no idea why you would know that. Like, I was going to ask you why you would know that.
James McAvoy, all I know is he was in the X-Men movies. I don't know anything about Sam Smith, and I don't even know who the third person is.
Same. The Bella Twins appeared in what 2014 film? We had Transformers 5. I can't read my writing.
Dark Side of the Light. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was Confessions of a Womanizer, apparently.
Huh.
Number three, what former world champion was a guest contestant on the NBC series Hollywood Game Night 2016? We had Chris Jericho. We were right, Chris Jericho.
Yes.
What former New Japan star played Thug Number One in the CBS drama Scorpions? We had Tanahashi. The correct answer was Rocky Romero. And Andrew was right on. Batista made a guest appearance on the HBO TV series Room 104. So
yes.
Not only did Jose not shut us out, we went 2 for 5. 2 for 5.
I contributed 1 point tonight as well, so that's, I don't know, I can go to bed without crying.
There we go. We got a tweet here from former emailer to the show, Bruce Lee, PhD. He sent us some images of a baseball card, a St. Louis Cardinals baseball card featuring Randy Poffo.
That's
what he says. The macho slugger, Randy Poffo.
Oh, that's great. Huh. Yeah, I haven't heard from Bruce in a while.
Yeah. Andrew, that's all we got. So is there anything else?
There is. To discuss? Five anything else's, as in five questions
all right.
For you.
I was born ready for this moment.
If Mike gets all five right, I will send him $5 on Venmo. It's a hell of a deal. Great opportunity. It's a great side income. I went to a concert last night in St. Paul, and so tonight's theme is music.
Okay.
What concert was it? I'm embarrassed to say. Actually, maybe not. Do you know Rebecca Black from the Friday singer?
I think I do, yes.
She, like, went viral for Friday, Gotta Get Down on Friday.
Yes.
She's legit these days. She's, like, a pop singer. I think she's pretty talented. So, I don't know. Probably 400 or 500 people there at this bar. Was there with a friend. So, yeah, I dug it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, check her out, everyone.
There's a bunch of concerts coming to Boston that I haven't been to a concert in like a long time thanks to COVID.
Same. Yeah,
right? But there's a ton of shows coming to like my area that I want to see to the point where I'm almost like, all right, I can't go see all of these. So I need to come up with what the plan is here.
who's top of the list?
Only because I've never seen them live before, and this may be the last chance to, because they could get in a fight and break up again very soon. Blink-182 is at the Garden on
Oh, Earth. Wow.
And
I didn't know they were back together.
Yes, the original lineup is back together. So they're touring now, so I do want to see that. That's Sunday. I don't have tickets yet, but I was thinking about maybe trying to convince my wife to have a night out and... the music is much more up my alley than hers, so
mm-hmm.
we'll We'll see. But you never know. She may agree to it.
I would see them live, yeah.
How about this? The big story in my neck of the woods here is that Taylor Swift is playing Gillette Stadium this weekend.
Oh, geez.
And a friend of mine was trying to take his daughter to go see that. She's like, I don't know, she's probably 10 years old. She's begging for tickets. Like, please, 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 please. The cheapest tickets he could find, which were behind the stage.
Yeah.
It said right on there, obstructive view behind the stage, $1,200 apiece.
Oh, my God.
He was like, there's no way. I know. The crazy thing is someone is willing to spend that, I'm sure.
I don't understand that at all. Like, I guess I like a couple of her songs, but there is, like, nobody I would pay $1,200
to
see.
Nope.
Yeah, it was like... The Rebecca Black ticket was like $25 with like charges, and so like multiply that by 300 basically, and that's one T Swift show. Yeah, that's
it's crazy. Yeah, there's not anybody I would be willing to spend that much money to see.
I guess if Kurt Cobain had faked his death and he was still alive and he would do like a private show, I would do that. But otherwise, I wouldn't even do half of that much for like anyone. But maybe I'm just not into music. But man, that's insane.
I can't imagine anyone, me ever spending that much money to see anybody. And there's a bunch of acts that I've always wanted to see and never did, and now I won't get the chance to. Like, one of the ones that was on a bucket list for a while, and now it will never happen, is Prince. I never saw Prince.
Oh, that would have been fun.
No, it never will. A friend of mine, how about this? This is crazy.
Yeah.
I don't remember the year. But a friend of mine was in Minneapolis or St. Paul. Where was Paisley Park? Is it St. Paul or Minneapolis?
That's Chanhassen, actually.
Okay.
It's super random, but yeah.
It's got to be close to, like, the city, though, right?
Oh, yeah. It's probably 20 minutes away from Minneapolis.
Okay. So I forget the year. I'm going to guess. I'm guessing we were at the end of college. It was probably 2005, 2006, maybe somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was out visiting a friend, and he was in that area. And he Twitter didn't exist yet. So I don't know if it was – maybe he saw it on Facebook. Facebook existed. I think he was part of some, like, email fan club or something like that, and got, like, this random – like, he was out in the area on a Friday night, got an email that was like, boom, Prince is doing a concert at Paisley Park. Like, the first 400 people that get here get in. And him and his friend got there and got in.
Dang.
And I was like, that had to have been the most amazing experience ever. He's like, yeah. He goes, it was kind of an out-of-body experience. He's like, you're in like a private 400-seat venue at the guy's house. And he does like a – and I said, what did he do? Like, was he doing new music? Or he was getting ready to go on tour, I think. So he was like just testing out a playlist. He played for like 2.5 hours.
Jeez.
And I was like, that would have been awesome.
A guy I work with had the same thing. He got to see a show there. Same thing, like a couple hundred people there, but
yeah.
Yeah,
I guess it happened. From what I understand, like that would happen often, where like, you know, fan club people would get an email that'd be like, "Hey, it's 6:30 on a Friday at 10 p.m. Prince is going to do a show. Like the first whatever, how many people get here can get in." Which is wild to me, but that's awesome.
Yeah. I live, I don't know, 6-7 miles from Paisley Park. And, like, apparently he used to just, like, ride his bike around, just, like, casually. And, like, I was like, man, what if he was alive and I'm just, like, driving? And I'm like, oh, my God, that was Prince on a bicycle.
Have you ever heard the Kevin Smith story about when he worked with Prince?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a pretty long story. It's like a half an hour long. It's on one of his Q&A DVDs, which when Prince died, I remember he said like he felt bad about retelling the story. But he does it in a comical way, but it just kind of like brings you inside what working with Prince could be like. And he'd said some stuff in there that wasn't flattering to Prince. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what he felt bad about. But one of the things was like somebody at one point said like one of Prince's handlers were like, oh, yeah, you were supposed to meet with Prince, but he's going to be late. He's playing basketball. And Kevin Smith was like, he's playing basketball. Like, what does he wear to play basketball? And you know, his manager or whoever was like, well, he wears like a like a warm-up suit and sneakers. And he was like, Prince wears sneakers? Like, he doesn't just wear, like, boots? Like,
yeah.
What kind of sneakers does Prince wear? Like, he was fascinated by, like, what do you mean Prince just wears regular clothes? Like, I've never seen Prince just wear regular clothes.
Yeah.
And one of the funniest things was they were talking about something, like, he was supposed to meet them at 10 o'clock to do some interview for, like, a documentary. Basically, Prince wanted to make a documentary, and he liked one of Kevin Smith's movies. I think it was Dogma, and he wanted Kevin Smith to direct it. And he got there and found out that that's what Prince wanted. He thought just Prince wanted to have a meeting. And he was like, I can't direct a documentary. Like, I've never directed a documentary before. But that's what Prince wanted him to do. And he said that to, like, one of, like, his Prince's handlers. He was like, I can't do this. Like, you don't have the right guy. I'm not a documentary filmmaker. Like, I do, you know, fart jokes. And I don't do documentaries. And this the woman said to him, Prince, I think the direct quote was, Prince has lived in Prince world for a very long time. And he doesn't understand why people just can't complete simple tasks for him. So just do your best, and we'll go from there. Like, Prince doesn't understand why at 2 in the morning in Minnesota he can't get a giraffe delivered to his front door.
Yeah.
He'll just say, like, well, why not? And she goes, I'll try to explain to him, Prince, it's 2 in the morning. We're in Minnesota. You want a giraffe. Like, it just it can't happen. He just – well, why? He just can't understand why a simple request can't happen because he's, quote, lived in Prince world for a very long time.
Oh, wow.
Just, I guess, used to getting whatever you want, but fascinating. And then I guess there's, like, this vault. We're going on a very long Prince deep dive here.
Oh, man, that's
but
fine.
There's a vault. He has a vault in his house that has just, I guess, hours upon hours of unreleased material.
Oh, dang.
And that's what, you know, Kevin Smith got done with his documentary, and he's like, I think this is garbage. Like, nobody should ever see this.
Yeah.
And the woman who he's working with was like, no one's ever going to see it. Like, it's fine. And he goes, what do you mean? She was like, when this gets done, Prince is going to put it in the vault. He's, what's the vault? And she goes, I've directed 15 full-scale music videos for Prince. And he goes, oh, that's awesome. Like, which ones did you direct? She goes, you've never seen them. They're for songs you've never heard. And he goes, what are you talking about? I guess he has, like, hundreds of unreleased material in this vault. But that's banked. He did them. They're done.
Yeah.
And when he felt like the time was right, he would release it. And now, I mean, who knows? I'm sure it'll probably get released at some point, whoever ends up with his estate. I think they're still fighting over his estate, actually.
I think so. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Court, so. But
that's crazy.
Anyway. Yeah. Huh. So, I'm sorry. $5 challenge music.
You're good.
Prince diatribe.
That's what the show is about. Who knows where we go? All right, music. $5 challenge. Question number one. The Maestro debuted in WCW in the late 90s. What was the name of his valet? And I will accept two different names for this answer.
Two different names?
I'll accept. I'll accept the current, the name that it was, or a previous gimmick this person used. Feeling very generous.
The Maestro in WCW. I think I know what the name was for the Maestro. I don't remember a previous gimmick, though, to be honest with you.
His valet.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I remember the name that they used.
Yeah.
With the Maestro, but I don't remember her having a previous gimmick anywhere else.
Oh,
so,
gotcha.
I think the name was Symphony. Symphony.
Maestro.
Final answer. I guess it's not final answer because we have four more questions, but.
Which person sang the DX theme song, Triple H's My Time theme song, and X-Pac theme? They sang all three.
Who?
Yeah, who did it? Who did it? Who sang it?
I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. I know they were billed at one point as being the DX band when they did the live version at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I also believe that it was like Triple H's cousin or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
I want to say Chris something. I have the name, first name Chris being in my head. What was the guy's name? I also think he died. What the hell was his name? Chris, it's Chris, I got Chris. Chris, I don't think this is right, but like Chris, only because I want to say I read something at one point that they were related. I'll say Chris Levesque, but I don't think that's correct. I'm not even 100% sure that they were related, but I think I read at some point that they were.
I feel like I've heard that too, but yeah, I don't know for sure. Chris number three. What was West Texas Rednecks member Curly Bill better known as? And same thing, I will give you two different previous gimmicks. Will
work. I'm sorry, you cut out there a little bit.
From the West Texas Redneck, Curly Bill. What was Curly Bill better known as?
I have no idea. So let's go with. I don't know who Curly Bill is at all. Let's. I would imagine he had a more famous gimmick than Curly Bill. So I'm going to say Earthquake. Don't think it's right.
Question number four. What were the names? I'll give you 0.5s for these. What were the names of the two songs Three Count released?
You said I'll get 0.5s for these?
Yeah, if you got both, you'll get a full point. If you got like one of the names, I'll give you 0.5.
Okay. I think one of them was the three count dance or something like that.
Should I go with three count dance?
Three count dance, yeah. Or dance the three count or something like that.
Good.
The other is going to be called... because I don't know and I'm coming up with a name. The triple threat. Yeah, just that. The triple threat, sure.
Then the other one you want, dance the three count or what? Or dancing the three count, what was it?
Something with like dance the three count. Like, yeah, dance the three count, maybe something like that.
Okay.
Dance the three count.
In 2000.
Three count dance. 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 That's it. Sorry.
No, you're good.
Just rolls off the tongue a little bit better.
In 2007, which woman wrestler tried to impress Timbaland with her singing ability?
Well, the one that makes sense would be Jillian Hall.
Oh. Are you locked in?
I assume that was on an episode of Raw. Were they guest hosting them? I don't know. But yes, I am locked in, yes.
Do we have a sound effect for it? Or a random one.
We were gonna play random sound effects for effect every week. That's what we're gonna do, right?
Yeah.
All right. So I am locked in.
Take your clothes off.
That was not us telling anyone to do that. Just for the record.
Yeah, just for the record.
Keep your clothes
just
on.
Just for the
everyone.
Record. Please. Yeah.
Okay. All right. You are locked in. I'm going to give you for sure two. Yeah. We'll go down the list and see how it goes. Okay. What was Maestro's valet's name? I was surprised at this. What was Maestro's valet name? You guessed Symphony. You're correct. It was Symphony. I would also have accepted Ryan Shamrock. Her WWF name.
Was that the same person? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I remember she joined WCW when they were just like hiring everyone, but I didn't remember if she ever made it to TV or what she did, but yeah.
Wow, okay.
Who sang the DX theme song, Triple H's My Time, and X-Pac theme? You guessed Chris Levesque. You know what? I'm going to give you a half a point on this. His name was Chris Warren.
Warren.
Yeah. And he did die... 2 years ago, I think. 4 or 5, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know if that relation to the Triple H part is true, but I remember reading that at one point.
I know, I've heard the same thing, but yeah, maybe it's one of those things you just like hear as a kid, and then you're just like, oh, okay, that makes sense, but somebody just made it up.
Yeah.
Number three, what was West Texas Rednecks member Curly Bill? What was Curly Bill better known as? You guessed Earthquake. Curly Bill was Vincent / Virgil.
It's just a little different. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is weird.
Slightly different than Earthquake.
He doesn't even have curly hair, so I don't know what he was Curly Bill. what were the names of the two songs Three Count released? You guessed the Triple Threat and the Three Count Dance. Super close on one. One is Can't Get You Out of My Heart. That was the first one. And then Dance with Three Count. At one point, you said Dance the Three Count. So I was like, what up? Did I give him 0.25? I don't know. And then last question, 2007, which woman wrestler tried to impress Timbaland with her singing ability? I forgot this gimmick, but you were 100% correct. It was Jillian Hall.
Yeah, she was the one that was singing all the time.
Yeah.
Somewhat poorly.
Yeah, I just remember like the mole thing and
yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm looking here. There's been no breaking news since the show started, so I think that means we can wrap up.
Let's wrap it up.
Where else can people find you?
You can find me on the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast. We are planning a new episode for June, so I'll let you know when that comes out. Otherwise, check out the previous 50-some episodes on the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast.
You can follow me on Twitter at Torch McMahon. Email the show, allelitafter@gmail.com. And, of course, if you want to call in next week, all you got to do is starting at 9 p.m. Eastern on Monday night, dial 515-605-9345, and we'll get you on the air. But that'll do it for this week's show. We'll be back with a lot more to talk about next week. Thanks for listening to the show. Talk to you later. Bye. Oh. I think, oh, here it goes.